Welcome to another edition of San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley. Without further ado, enjoy the program.
The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce is proud to sponsor the monthly Monte Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast, highlighting member businesses, events, and organizations. The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce exists to promote businesses and events in the Monte Vista area. They serve its members and the community at large by planning and hosting many local events, social media promotions, advertising, and help to improve community relations and communications among the residents and guests of the Monte Vista area. Their mission is to advance a sustainable business environment and improve the quality of life for the community. The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce is located at 947 First Avenue in Monte Vista. You can call them at 719-852-2731. That's 719-852-2731. Or visit their website, montevistachamber.org. That's montevistachamber.org. And check back at the beginning of every month for another Monte Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast.
Coming up on this special New Year Extended Version podcast are some great interviews. The January 2021 Chamber of Commerce Business of the Month is Weaver's Level Best Septic and Excavation. Following that are the January featured businesses. The first is with San Luis Valley Federal Bank, featuring CEO Dwayne Bussey, Mortgage Loan Officer Andrea Archuleta Cisneros, and Monte Vista Branch Manager Mindy Chavez. Following that is Jennifer Hanna, Victim Advocate and the Hotline Coordinator, and Shelley Martinez, Forensic Interviewer and Family Advocate, both of the nonprofit organization TuCasa. And wrapping up this podcast is an extended interview with the Friends of Sky High, featuring co-chairs Carla Shriver and Kathy Woods, plus Mark Thompson, Alcon Construction Project Manager. Please enjoy this incredibly informative podcast.
I'm Adam, and this is the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce Business Spotlight Podcast for January 2021. The Chamber's Business of the Month for January is Weaver's Level Best Septic and Excavation, which is also the home of San Luis Valley Precast. Unfortunately, previous commitments and scheduling issues precluded our getting together with the Weavers to record their podcast interview. Instead, they sent the following information to us to provide to you. Weaver's Level Best Septic and Excavation is the premier company for all your septic system, sewer, and excavation needs in the San Luis Valley and surrounding areas in Colorado. They made their name through many years of performing reliable, excellent work, building enduring relationships with their customers. The highly trained technicians at Weaver's Level Best have national certifications and experience. They're available to provide a wide array of installation, maintenance, or repair services with equipment to provide your project with the professional touch it deserves. This year has been hard on many companies in the world, and as a utility company, Weaver's Level Best Septic and Excavation did not have to shut down because of the pandemic. They're incredibly happy to have a full staff of delivery drivers, sewer service technicians, equipment operators, and pumper truck drivers to handle your needs. Please call to schedule installation services for new construction, site planning, everyday maintenance, inspection, repair, or emergency service. San Luis Valley Precast is South Central Colorado's leading provider for precast concrete materials, including manholes, grease interceptors, and septic tanks in a wide variety of sizes. As members of the National Precast Concrete Association, NPCA, they seek to bring individuals and contractors the best quality septic tanks, pricing, and availability. San Luis Valley Precast works hard year-round to manufacture septic tanks in their indoor facility. They specialize in low-profile, watertight septic tanks with no mid-seam. Come by their location at 215 North Washington Street in Monte Vista to check out their quality precast construction. San Luis Valley Precast has a well-stocked warehouse of septic, sewer, and waterline parts ready for orders, large or small. Please call their office to schedule product delivery or prior to arrival so they can make your invoice and products ready when you arrive. Check them out at slvprecastco.com. That's slvprecastco.com. You can call Weaver's Level Best at 719-852-2731. 7336. Call San Luis Valley Precast at 719-852-6915 or email wlbslv@gmail.com. That's Weaver's Level Best Septic and Excavation and San Luis Valley Precast, the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce's Business of the Month for January.
San Luis Valley Federal Bank has 67 full-time employees and 3 convenient offices, 2 in Alamosa and 1 office in Monte Vista, Colorado. They have been providing financial services to residents of Colorado's San Luis Valley since 1899.
Have you been looking for local banking services with ties to the communities here in the vast San Luis Valley? You need to consider San Luis Valley Federal Bank. They are a mutual bank with a mission to serve their employees, members, and community with respect, fairness, and trust. And to find out more about their mission, their services, commitment to our community, and a whole lot more, we got together with Dwayne Bussey. Dwayne is the CEO and a board member. Also joining us is Andrea Archuleta Cisneros. She is a mortgage loan officer. And Mindy Chavez. Mindy is the Monte Vista branch manager. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. We appreciate it. First, let's go around the table and get everybody's story. And Dwayne, of course, we'll start with you. Where are you originally from, sir?
Adam, thank you. It's great to have the opportunity to talk a little bit about the bank. I was born in Michigan, moved to Colorado with the family, Colorado Springs, when we were 4. So I grew up in Colorado Springs, came down to the Valley to go to school at Adams State, met my wife there, graduated in 1982. My first job out of college was SOV Federal Bank. Started as a loan officer like Andrea is now and been there for 38 years. It's just been a great experience.
So you've gone all the way up the chain.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Love it. What other groups are you involved with here in the San Luis Valley?
Well, there's been so many opportunities working at the bank. The bank has always encouraged our people to be involved in the community, partly to support the activities of the organizations and partly to know what's going on. It helps us make better decisions at the bank for services that we need to provide. Currently, I'm on the foundation board of Adams State, the hospital foundation, San Luis Valley Regional Medical Center, or San Luis Valley Health, as it's now referred to, involved in some of the economic development groups in the valley, board member of Trout Unlimited, love to fly fish. It's one of the kind of fun side things.
I was going to ask, that's one of the next questions is, what do you do in your off time?
It's hard to turn the brain off, and now I'm sure that goes for Mindy and Andrea as well. Yeah, there's always things going through your mind, but it's nice to be able to get out and enjoy some of the beautiful surroundings that the valley offers. So I love to fly fish, like to golf a little bit. I'm not very good. Started when I was older, and that doesn't always work as well as when you learn as a kid, right? But that's a lot of fun. I just love to get out and hike and enjoy the outdoors.
Dwayne, at the end of the day, what makes you most happy about what you do?
Well, we have so many opportunities to be part of community development. And then just develop some really neat relationships with families, individuals, and businesses. In my position at the bank, I get to be involved in some of the strategic issues and try to find some solutions to some of those challenges that we have in our community. That's the best part of it, the people relationships and the community development piece.
Mindy, how about you? Where are you originally from?
I was born in Gunnison and in the 70s moved to Del Norte with my family. My dad had an insurance agency in the valley in Del Norte for years and then moved to the Monte Vista area. He operated that with my mom, and I helped him until he retired in the 90s. And then I started in the bank in 1999 as a teller in Alamosa Branch. So I've been here for about 21 years, transferred to Monte Vista March of this year, I think.
You are a new face out here.
I am. Married, live in Alamosa currently. We enjoy taking road trips and exploring Colorado, just seeing what Colorado has to offer.
There's a lot to see, isn't there?
And it's a beautiful state.
Well, what about the end of the day? What makes you most happy about what you do here?
You know, I'd agree with Dwayne, being able to make the relationships with our members. It's been really interesting when you work with someone who's been here as long as Dwayne has, you run into their customers, their members, and their story. So it's been really interesting to see that transformation as well as being here this long. You open accounts for young people, get their first account started, they get married, they start businesses, they move on, they go to college, come back and maybe settle down here. So it's kind of a full circle. It's been a lot of fun and definitely rewarding to be able to share those important moments with our members.
Last but not least, hi, Andrea.
How are you?
I'm doing awesome. You need to buy a home? Thinking about it? This is the lady to talk to.
Well, I sure hope so. So I am originally from over in Huerfano County and a transplant to come to ASC back before it was ASU. went to school there. And when I graduated, I was liking the Valley pretty well. My little sister was still in school here, so was lucky enough to get on with the bank and utilize my degree and was able to grow into that. And I believe now the Valley has become my home.
Any particular groups you're involved with around here?
So I currently sit on the board for the San Luis Valley Housing Coalition. And that is a great nonprofit organization that is in Alamosa, but they serve all seven counties of the Valley. And I also sit on the Alamosa High School FFA alumni.
How about your off time? Any particular hobbies or special interests?
Well, I do definitely like to hunt and be outdoors. My family has a small ranch in Huerfano County, so we go over and still partake in a lot of the work or fun over in that area. I think it's fun, but some might say it's work.
At the end of the day, what makes you most happy about what you do?
You know, I think it's partially similar to Duane and Mindy as well. I love getting to not only build a connection and know my members, but knowing that I was able to help them get into a home and make sure they were financially comfortable, but then also see them grow, whether it's into a bigger home or just have their family grow and also achieve financial comfort. A lot of members, you know, need to make changes to make sure they are comfortable with changing environmental conditions. And I like knowing that I can assist in that.
Well, San Luis Valley Federal Bank is one of the Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce's featured businesses for the month of January 2021. So congratulations to everybody. We're just kind of going to go around the table here. Anybody feel free to answer. First, tell me a little bit about San Luis Valley Federal Bank and feel free to get into as much detail as you'd like. What is the mission and vision?
Well, you hit on the mission earlier. It's short and sweet. We really focus on having a great environment for our staff to work in. We think if we've got a good environment for the staff, they're going to take great care of our members, and our members' customers are the second group. And then we want to be an important part of the community, not just supporting them financially, but investing in a number of different ways. We have a lot of folks on the bank staff volunteering for organizations, so we want to try to make a difference in that respect as well. The bank was started initially in 1890. It didn't go very far. The group didn't have enough momentum, and they shut things down and then reorganized again in 1899 as the Alamosa Building and Loan Association. We have what used to be a building and loan charter. Now it's a mutual thrift charter from the federal government to do banking business. So it's a little bit like It's a Wonderful Life and the Bailey Building and Loan and Jimmy Stewart. We are a mutual company, so we're a little bit like a credit union in that our depositors are voting members. In our charter, it actually prescribes that those depositors have a vote for every $100 they have on deposit, not to exceed 1,000 votes so that one big depositor can't control everything. And they have a right to vote at our annual meeting and any matters that would be significant in the future organization of the bank. Those members have a say. We think that's a great culture to operate in. We feel like we have maybe a deeper obligation to serve those members because of that relationship that they have as a voting member. The mutual form of the bank has been in existence ever since it was originally chartered. But we did create a holding company, a mutual holding company, just a little over a year ago. And that holding company provides some additional growth opportunities for the bank. And so if the bank needed to borrow some additional funds to shore up the capital of the bank, to do an acquisition, to help get us in another line of business, or if the bank wanted to sell a small portion of stock, the minority of the stock could be sold to generate some capital that would allow the bank to maybe get into another line of business or to do an acquisition of another financial institution. We are an extremely well-capitalized bank right now. We have one of the higher capital ratings of any bank in Colorado. So our members can be assured that the bank is in good financial hands, but the mutual holding company provides some opportunities to grow that. So we could go in another expanded direction if we wanted to for additional services.
Now, you're primarily servicing just the San Luis Valley?
We accept deposits just from the six counties of the San Luis Valley.
Okay.
We occasionally make a loan to a member that may be moving to Denver, as long as it's in the state of Colorado. But for the most part, our lending is done right here.
You're really focused in San Luis Valley.
Absolutely. We have a mortgage sort of background or history. By regulation, that was the primary type of loan that we were supposed to be making by our charter. And the government has slowly deregulated mutual companies, savings and loan companies, to allow us to do essentially what a commercial bank can do. So we have a very robust commercial lending department now. We can handle all commercial deposit needs. And so we really look very much like any bank to our members and to the public.
Please briefly cover some of the services you offer. Obviously, there's personal service and business services as well.
Yeah, I might ask Andrea to touch on what we provide for individual families and consumers.
So on the lending side, we definitely offer a wide variety of commercial loans. I specialize in personal, consumer, and mortgage lending. So we have a very competitive rate program through a secondary market lender. It's a great program because you get a very competitive rate with local servicing. So we still service that loan for the full 20 or 30 year term. You ever need anything, you still come directly into one of our three branches to visit us on that. We have first-time homebuyer options as well as construction loans. So if you're looking at building from the ground up, we can do that and you can tailor your home to exactly what you want. On the personal side, we have anything from an unsecured to vehicle recreational. So just about anything you get at a bigger bank, you can get right here local.
Anything to add to that?
And on the deposit side, we have some great no-fee checking accounts. We also have chipmunk accounts for our children. We have savings accounts that you can have a debit card with. We have a lot of really great commercial products that we offer. We can help businesses get set up to accept debit or credit cards. They can make deposits from the comfort of their offices if they don't want to come in and make those check deposits. We have money market accounts. We have individual retirement accounts. And we have health savings accounts. So we have a whole ton of products that can help pretty much any member with their deposit needs.
In other words, they're not sure, pick up the phone and call and find out.
Exactly.
Adam, they can also go online. Like a lot of banks, we've been investing in our digital services.
Mm-hmm.
So someone can now apply for a deposit account online. We have online loan applications. We've got, of course, all the mobile and online banking channels. And we've got Zelle, which is a nationally recognized person-to-person payment system. You can go out to lunch with your friend and split the bill, and they can send you $10 for their share of the lunch and those kind of things. It's a real simple process to use.
Mm-hmm.
We've also got the digital wallet now, so you can pay with your digital phone through Apple Pay, Google Pay, or Samsung Pay. So we've been investing in those kinds of digital tools, which lots of people are interested in, especially our younger members.
How has the whole COVID-19 situation affected San Luis Valley Federal Bank, and what did you all have to do to adapt?
Well, there were some operational logistics that we had to put in place, like so many different businesses. We've got all the PPP equipment, so our employees have masks on anytime they're engaging with the public or each other in closed spaces. We've got plexiglass mounted everywhere. We have extra cleaning protocols. So all those things are pretty familiar to people and certainly most of the businesses in the community. We did reduce our hours a little bit to allow for a little bit of a safer work environment.
Mm-hmm.
We did shut down our lobbies for a period of time. All the banks in the Valley kind of went together jointly to do that, recognizing that we had to make some initial changes there. Once we got comfortable with kind of what the COVID situation was and things settled down a little bit towards the summertime, we all opened our lobbies back up and expanded hours. And we still were doing business through Drive Up and, our online channels when the lobby was closed. Right now, we're open from 10 to 2. We were concerned about many of our employees who have kids in school or daycares. The schools were going back and forth to an in-person or online environment. We had some parents that felt like they had to be home. So our numbers were reduced a little bit, so we didn't have the same ability to take care of our members. So we felt like we had to reduce the time a little bit. But we know that we'll be able to get back to full hours here fairly quickly, especially with a vaccine rolling out here shortly.
I will say, coming over here to the Monta Vista branch, it's never really been an issue other than remembering it's 10 to 2 right now.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's obvious you've got protocols in place here. And honestly, I've never really had to wait more than just a few minutes. It's not been an issue. I appreciate y'all doing that.
We've tried to put some things into place, knowing that some of our members were struggling. So we've had no-fee extension programs. If you had a mortgage loan and you were struggling with that, we've had some very low interest rate loans for either consumers or businesses. We participated in the SBA's PPP program.
Mm-hmm.
We did over 120 of those loans. Our members were very appreciative of that. And of course, that program did not require repayment. That was going to be forgiven as long as the funds were used to pay salaries and certain expenses that qualified. And we've had a number of those members already submit applications for forgiveness. And that was a great benefit for a number of our businesses. We also waived NSF fees for a little while on checking accounts, knowing that some folks were struggling getting paychecks in. And we made some contributions significant to the food bank, to the hospital, $10,000 to each of them to help with those kind of things. So Maybe there's some other things you guys can think of, but those are some of the adjustments and changes that we made.
Well, and I think for us on the deposit side, making sure that we were equipped to handle everything through drive up, opening accounts, taking care of wires, all of that. And then again, appreciating the employees, because it takes the employees' effort to make all of that work. And all of them have done a fantastic job making that accommodation. The bank also provided meals for all the employees for a couple of months, I believe. They brought in meals at all three branches, not only to help the employees, but it was nice for the area as well to help our restaurant owners and businesses to support them.
Well, with this podcast, of course, we're beginning a new year. Is there any type of assistance for local small businesses or customers that may still be struggling that you're going to be doing through the beginning of 2021?
Currently through the loan side, if somebody is still being impacted, they just need to call in and communicate that with their loan officer. And we do still have some extension options, some of those loan options available if they are directly being impacted to COVID.
And you would obviously recommend, before it gets too late, pick up the phone
early. Yes, definitely. We'd rather you be proactive than have a delinquency that then you're trying to catch back up in order for us to be able to do some of these extensions.
If Congress gets something approved in terms of a bill that will help people, and there's another SBA program coming out, we'll participate in that again.
Okay.
And our local SLVDRG has some low interest rate loan programs. Enterprise Colorado's got some grant and loan programs that are available for businesses. And you're starting to see some help come out for the restaurant industry and the state. I know the city of Alamosa's got a program available to help some of the restaurants. So along with what Andrea said, there's some other things that we think will be coming down for businesses to help support them.
So the best thing to do is drop by the website, look and see, because you're obviously posting this information as it's coming out, or pick up the phone and call and find out what's available.
Exactly.
Wonderful. Is there a common misconception or preconceived notion about San Luis Valley Federal Bank that you would like to dispel?
I don't know that it's a misconception, but most people don't understand the mutual concept, and maybe that's our fault for not promoting the differences. Most people just want their banking handled on a day-to-day basis and are not overly concerned about the structure of the organization. There's only 5 mutual banks left in Colorado, and we have 3 of them here in the San Luis Valley. We're one of them. Rio Grande Savings and Loan and Del Norte Bank are the other 2 here, and there's 1 in Trinidad and 1 in Gunnison. It's not a very common charter anymore, but we think it creates an environment knowing that that member is a voting member, that we've got a more vested interest in taking care of them. We can distribute a little bit more of our success through community dividends by supporting a lot of community organizations and creating a good work environment for our staff that we think then translates to a great work environment for members to do business in.
Obviously, you do give back. There's no question about that. Can you tell me about some of the ways that San Luis Valley Federal Bank is involved here locally in the Valley, starting with perhaps your commitment to our community? $1.9 million has been given back for the past 10 years. That's huge.
Yeah, that's part of our community support program. I'll start off saying that any bank's most important investment in the community is providing those services for people to buy homes, invest in businesses, help out municipal organizations with the financing needs. Those things allow the community to develop and create capital improvements. Providing banking services for individuals, those things are at the core of what we think we contribute to the community. Through some of our success, our board has committed to try to support 10% of the bank's net income back into community organizations.
Wow.
And so that's been what's allowed us to do this significant amount of money, this almost $2 million over the last number of years. The board of directors makes those decisions in December of the large contributions that we will make back to organizations like Adams State and Trinidad State, La Puente, the Creed Theater, Boys and Girls Clubs, Tu Casa, all those kinds of organizations that really provide a safety net for our community or invest in education are so important.
Those are great organizations to be working with.
Yes.
They bring a lot to the community. And you're doing scholarships too for Adams State and Trinidad as well?
Yeah, those are available to members. If you have an account there, or your parents have an account there, or your grandparents have an account there and you're going to school, you'd be eligible for one of those scholarships. One other thing that we do that's certainly unique to the Valley is our board has set aside $30,000 that we allow our members to designate where a share of that goes. So for every deposit account and loan account that you have one vote that you can cast for your favorite San Luis Valley charity. We've been taking those votes since about Thanksgiving, and we will give those charities that our members have voted for a share of that $30,000.
Why did the San Luis Valley Federal Bank join the Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce?
Well, we want to be supportive of all the economic and business development organizations. We know that chambers provide great networking opportunities for our staff. There's great educational programs available as well. And just to create a better pro-business environment, we want to be supportive of any of those opportunities.
Is there a particular question I should have asked any of you, but didn't?
Andrea, she's kind of biting her tongue over there. I think she maybe has something else she wants to say.
I don't have any for that one.
Is there anything else that any of you would like to mention?
Well, I'll say that I think people notice a difference when they come into a member-driven organization. We think that the environment is noticeably different. We really endeavor to serve, and every business wants to extend good service. But when you understand that the folks walking in the door that have their deposits are who you're obligated to take care of because they have a voting interest in the organization, we think it creates a more special environment. And working with local businesses, whether it's our bank, the hardware store down the street, it really supports local jobs. And we think that these two gals right here do such a great job of building emotional connections. That's really what our vision is that we can develop a deeper relationship with people than just processing banking transactions. We'd like to get to know people that do business with us, understand what some of those challenges are, and hopefully that we can be contributing to their success beyond just their finances.
Mindy, anything to add to that?
Just going a little bit more with what Dwayne said, we really do want to get to know our members and find out what their needs are. We don't have cookie cutter solutions for people. We really do interact with them to see the best account for them. Do they really need a debit card? It's for their best interest is what we're looking for.
Andrea?
I would definitely say we are looking out and trying to see what is in the best interest of all of our members and make sure we work extra diligently to make sure what we're providing them is in that. I would say right now is a great rate market for the loan side. So if anybody is needing to look at a lending product, feel free to definitely reach out to either myself or one of our loan staff and go through potentially what options there might be to put you in a better financial position.
Of course, you've got three locations, one in downtown Alamosa, one at West Alamosa, and right here in Monta Vista too. So very easy to find. Online, slvfed.bank. We'll take you right to the website. Lots and lots of information there. And of course, again, a mutual bank with a mission to serve their employees, members, and community with respect, fairness, and trust. It's San Luis Valley Federal Bank. Dwayne, Mindy, Andrea, thank you all for your time. I appreciate it.
Adam, thank you so much. We appreciate the opportunity.
Empowering all children and adults to live healthy, violence-free lives. That's the vision of Tu Casa, Inc., conveniently located in Alamosa and serving the entire San Luis Valley region. They even have a 24-hour hotline available if or when you need to reach them.
Did you know that we have a local organization dedicated to supporting healthy, violence-free lives and relationships for all children and adults right here in the San Luis Valley? Well, we do. That organization is called Tu Casa, Inc. Now, among other things, they provide crisis intervention, shelter services, and advocacy to victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence and their non-offending family members or caregivers. Now, to find out more about this awesome group of people, we got together with Jennifer Hanna. She's a victim advocate and the hotline coordinator. And also joining us is Shelley Martinez. She is a forensic interviewer and family advocate. Ladies, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Let's go around and get everybody's story. And Jennifer, we'll start with you. Where are you originally from?
I am born and raised in the big city of Alamosa, Colorado. My family has been here for quite a while. My mom's family are from mostly Canales County. My dad's family has been in Alamosa County for a long time. Yeah, and I have my family here.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, your past, your history before joining Tu Casa. What did you do?
I actually have been with Tu Casa as a full-time employee for about 4 years. Previous to that, I was going to school to Adams State University for sociology, and I volunteered at Tu Casa as well for about a year while I was getting my degree, and then I interned here. So I've been a part of the Tu Casa family for a little while. Before that, I was a family advocate at a Head Start here in Alamosa, and then I worked in nursing homes as a CNA for a little while I was kind of figuring out what I wanted to do. And now that I'm here, it's what I love, and I'm going to school currently to get my master's in social work. I've been a part of Tu Casa for a while, and I love it.
It sounds like a perfect fit for you.
It is, yeah.
Jennifer, what about your off time? Any particular hobbies or special interests?
I really enjoy my family. I have my small family, my husband and my daughter. She's 8 years old, so she keeps me pretty busy. We enjoy, I think, what is typical for, you know, Valley folks. Camping, ATVs, motorcycles, horses. I grew up in the country. I think a lot of us did. So I really enjoy a lot of that stuff. I like fishing, but I don't like fish.
At the end of the day, what makes you most happy about what you do at Tucasa?
At the end of the day, I am most happy when I'm able to talk with people who have experienced the worst things that you can imagine. You know, as long as someone feels like I heard them, like someone else cares about what has happened, that's what means the most to me. It can be tricky because we don't always have happy endings. We don't always have a nice story that wraps up with a bow, and we can feel like what we did, you know, was so impactful, but we can always know that at least we were a safe space for somebody.
All right, Shelley, how about you? Where are you originally from?
So I'm originally from Montana. I moved here in 1992. My husband is from Monta Vista. So that is what brought me to Colorado. And I've been here, I think if I calculate it right, it's been about 27, 28 years. So I've lived here as long as I lived in Montana. So I'm saying I'm from here is just as much as I say is that I'm from there. We live in Monta Vista now.
So you left Big Sky Country for the San Luis Valley.
I know. People ask me all the time, do you miss Montana? Well, of course I do. I mean, I mostly miss my family. Colorado and Montana, it looks a lot alike. I mean, it's not like I went to Arizona, you know. It's similar enough. I miss my family and I miss my friends from there when people ask. But it's not so much that I miss the view because I think it's really, really similar.
Interesting. I've never been to Montana, so I don't know. But I've heard a lot of good things about it.
Well, it's beautiful. It's as beautiful as Colorado.
There you go. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself, your past, your history. What have you done prior to joining Tucasa?
Prior to working at Tucasa, and actually just to clarify, I work at Tucasa, but I work on the children's advocacy side. It's a program under Tucasa. I mean, I still say that I work at Tucasa, but more specifically, I work on the children's advocacy side. Prior to working for Tucasa, I worked as a child protection caseworker for Rio Grande and Alamosa County. I did child welfare for about 9 years. I've worked at Tucasa for about 8 years. It'll be 8 years in March, I believe. When I first came to Tucasa, I was actually hired on as the sexual assault response team coordinator. So my job was to develop teams of professionals who work in the fields that would deal with sexual assault survivors. And we met as groups to develop protocols and procedures and just to try to get investigations to be the same in every single county. Because as you know, there's many counties in the San Luis Valley and each law enforcement agency, they were doing their own thing, but they were doing what they knew. And sometimes it wasn't the same as the other agencies. And so it was to try to develop a protocol that was across the board. I believe I did that for 2 years. And then with my history in child welfare, the Child Advocacy Center was always very appealing to me. I have a soft place in my heart for protecting children. I'm not going to say it was a better fit, but it definitely was part of my passion and what I enjoy doing. So it was an easy transition from being the sexual assault response team coordinator to a forensic interviewer and a family advocate on the children's advocacy side.
What about your off time? Any particular hobbies or special interests, Shelley?
Well, that has fluctuated over the years. I have grown children, so I have a lot more free time on my hands than Miss Jen. I'm a huge supporter of our breweries in town. I really enjoy the craft beer. Then when COVID hit, of course, that slowed things down. In addition to that, one of my grown children, my daughter, she got married and had a baby. So now my time is spent playing with a very sweet, very wonderful 6-month-old granddaughter. And she's pretty much my hobby now.
Absolutely understand that. Grandchildren are wonderful.
They change your life. It's incredible.
At the end of the day, Shelley, what makes you most happy about what you do?
At the end of the day, what makes me the most happy about what I do is I am able to support families through a very sad and often horrific situation that they are involved in due to some abuse to a child that they either know or is their own. That is as a family advocate. On the flip side of that, when I'm a forensic interviewer, At the end of the day, the thing that I like the best about being a forensic interviewer is that I get to be that voice for that child in situations where, so they don't have to tell their story more than one time. They come in, they say it to me, and then the other professionals hear that from another room. And so they're not in the same room with the child. So I'm in a way relaying that information to them. And then when it comes time for the case to go to court, if that is to happen, I testify on their behalf a lot of times. So being the voice for children who have been through this horrific situation is, for me at the end of the day, what I like the best about being a forensic interviewer.
We're going to get into a little more detail on everything that you all offer there. Tucasa Inc., of course, is one of the Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce's featured businesses for the month of January, so congratulations on that. Tell me a little bit about Tucasa Inc., and please feel free to get into as much detail as you'd like. First, what is your mission and vision?
So overall, our mission and vision is to empower adults and children to lead healthy, violence-free lives throughout all the counties of the San Luis Valley. And that's something that we try to stress. We are based in Alamosa, but we do serve all counties. We've even gone as far as Crestone to Creed to, you know, San Luis, wherever we need to go to try to get services, we can do that. Things have been really different with COVID as far as like mobile advocacy, but we're still trying to reach as many people as possible. So that's our overall mission and vision. Some of our services, and I'll start with Tucasa, because like Shelley said, we do have the Tucasa Inc. umbrella, and Tucasa is an agency under that, and so is the CAC. So at Tucasa, we serve adults, and we can serve children as well, about 15 years old and up, with confidentiality. So at Tucasa, we have an incredible amount of confidentiality. We are community-based. We do not disclose any information given to us unless it's child abuse. That's something we have to report. But outside of that, someone can come in and talk to us about something, and we will not disclose any of that information to anyone. The beautiful thing about that is it sets a really, really safe space for someone to come in and talk about something that's not an easy thing to talk about. Sometimes engaging with law enforcement right away when it comes to domestic violence or sexual assault can actually put someone in more danger. When someone's trying to get away from that situation, that is the most dangerous time. And a lot of times it's really helpful to have that planned out and have a plan in place before someone just engages with the criminal justice system. So that's what we're trying to do. We definitely can help people even if they don't want to seek law enforcement services or if they do. We want to try to get someone to safety. That's our most important thing.
So on the children's advocacy side, it's very different services than what the Tucasa advocates provide. We serve children ages 0 to 17, and we also serve adults with developmental disabilities, just because their intellectual level is often that of a child. So we do serve them as well as far as a forensic interview and advocacy. As a family advocate, we are the first people that the family sees when they come to the doors of the Children's Advocacy Center. And it's our job to support them through the entire process as much as they want. We are voluntary. We're not court ordered. There's nothing that says that they have to work with us the entire time, but that is something that we will do. That includes referring them to services, counseling services, maybe even medical services, just whatever they bring to us as needs. We try to find resources in the Valley to help them out. As I mentioned before, if the case does go to court, we will accompany them to court and just support them through that so that they don't feel like they're alone in this process. The forensic interview side of it is myself or the other forensic interviewers. We have two others in the building, Teresa Ortega and Michelle Resendiz. It's a one-on-one interview with a child. It's very child-friendly. It's very child-driven. We do not introduce anything. They are there to talk about what is happening to them. Sometimes what's reported to us comes out in the interviews and sometimes it doesn't. It's up to the child to say what has happened to them. We will only take referrals from social services, law enforcement, or the DA's office. We do not take referrals from parents. We do not take referrals from any other agencies. There's a lot of reasons for that, but basically if a crime has been committed on a child, it needs to be reported to law enforcement or DSS anyway. And so that's the best route to go. One position that I didn't mention that I have is I'm the multidisciplinary team coordinator. And what that is that once a month in every county, Rio Grande and Mineral are combined. We meet to discuss active cases and make sure that all parties are basically following through with what they said they were going to do and what their responsibilities are. It's a meeting to hold people accountable in a very positive and non-attacking way. We're just there to support them and find out where the case is at. We also have a SANE nurse on staff. She is contracted, so we call her when she's needed. She can do the sexual assault nurse exams on victims who have been sexually assaulted within 72 hours. We also partner with Valleywide's Community Care. They have a nurse that will do SANE exams on prepubescent and up. So we have nurses that can do those exams. Our nurse is Sarah Herrera, and she also does what we call wellness exams. Wellness exams are designed after the 72 hours to still do an examination of the child and just help them understand that regardless of what happened to them, that their bodies are still normal, you know, that something isn't wrong with them because of what happened. The wellness exams are very much designed for their mental health, and we encourage every family to set up those wellness exams just to help the child heal and recover in every way.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
Is this a big issue in the San Luis Valley?
It's a very big issue here. I have statistics, how many interviews we've done this year. We have 107 that we've served this year. Again, that's all six counties, but we are very busy.
Jennifer, this may be one for you. Someone asked me this in a roundabout way earlier, and I realize you cannot give a specific location. I'm not asking. Is there a safe house here in the Valley?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the way that I always explain where Two Costa is located, our main office where I'm at, where Shelly's at, that is located in Alamosa. We do have 5 secure shelter locations that are located throughout Alamosa.
Wonderful. What are your greatest challenges or needs right now, and how can someone help?
Honestly, our biggest challenge right now is COVID. We're only in the office part-time because we're 2 separate agencies in the same building. We have to abide by the 10 people in the building per agency rule. So like say Monday morning, the CAC staff is here and then we leave in the afternoon and go work from home. And then the Two Casa group comes in. That allows, like if we have interviews that day, sometimes DSS can be here and law enforcement and then all staff and then the family, there's usually a parent and child because we're limiting how many can be in our building. That in itself is like 8 people. And so we had to really cut things down and split the days up. That's a challenge for us specifically as a group because there's 9 of us and we're like a family here. We're used to being around each other. We're used to spending time together from beginning of the day to the end of the day with each other. Sometimes we eat lunch together in our conference room. And so to split our agency up and to kind of create a division, which I know is not the intent, but it is what has happened, has been really difficult on most of us, I would say. As far as the needs, we're always looking for donations of any kind, especially monetary donations, just because right now people donating their things is always appreciated, but we're just not seeing the same amount of people. I think that money to keep our organization going right now is probably, I'm not going to say the most important, but I think during this time of COVID, it's really important.
And of course, all this contact information will be on the podcast page. If you're interested in learning more, their website, phone, all of that information, stop by the webpage and you can see how to reach out to these folks, how to donate and everything else. Jen, what would you like to add to that?
In an interesting way, COVID has actually flipped our numbers on the Two Casa side. So we've actually seen a really big increase in requests for specifically shelter at Two Casa. And luckily, we did get some COVID funding for our side that it just gave us a lot of flexibility in how we were able to get people shelter stays through the pandemic. And Michelle, my supervisor, actually pulled up some numbers just a few days ago for a grant report, and we did over 800 nights of shelter during the pandemic. And that's counting adults and children as one night for each. But we luckily had that funding that gave us the flexibility to change our services a little bit. And that's what's really, really awesome about our agency is we are community-based. So we can change up, you know, what we're doing to really fit the needs of survivors. That's what's most important here. And that's part of like our whole grassroots type of agency. We're able to see what people need and try to fit what we do to that. In order to do that, you know, we do need more flexible funds. Luckily, we had it, but we don't always have that. So like Shelley said, monetary donations are always helpful because then maybe we can get somebody some food that we don't have to justify their a certain income or anything like that. We can just give someone some food. To be very specific on needs, what I've seen through the pandemic has been requests for shelter, like I said, but also for cell phones. That's been a really interesting thing. And I don't know if that's because that's a huge way that people can communicate during the pandemic, you know, because they're not going out, they're not seeing people as much. Got a lot of requests for phones during the pandemic, and we've used allowance to do that. So I would say if someone wanted to get like a specific donation, track phones with minutes on them and donate that, that would be super helpful.
Jen, I also remember you mentioning a need for hotline volunteers.
That's been interesting as well. Like you said, I'm the hotline coordinator. So we typically have had a hotline that was comprised of at least 5 volunteers, and they, you know, were able to take all of our after-hour calls. When the pandemic hit, we did kind of shift to staff taking calls because we wanted to limit exposures. And it was just a decision we made that we thought was best. And ever since we did that, it has been really difficult to get a volunteer base going again. So, you know, if anyone would like to volunteer, please reach out to me because I would love to have more. We do have 2 really awesome volunteers right now, but I'm always looking for more.
Is there a common misconception or preconceived notion about what you all do that you'd like to dispel?
I feel like, especially when I first started at TuCasa, I heard that TuCasa didn't like law enforcement, or that we're like, I literally heard this, man haters. We do serve all genders at TuCasa. We're not just a women's organization. We do see domestic violence and sexual assault as largely something experienced by women with male perpetrators. But we absolutely are an inclusive agency. I mean, we've had men in shelter. We've had the LGBTQ community. We work with them. We're inclusive. So I just want to put that out there that not man haters. Also that we need law enforcement. We support law enforcement. But we also recognize that when it comes to domestic violence, sometimes it's not always the appropriate thing to engage with law enforcement right away for someone. And we just want to do what's best for the survivor. So that's the only place we're coming from. It's not a place of we don't want to collaborate. We absolutely do. But we just always have the client's needs at the forefront of what we're doing.
You're putting their safety first.
Yeah.
So why did TuCasa join the Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce?
I think a large part of that is that we do want to get out there and collaborate with all the different counties. I feel like there's a huge idea that we just serve Alamosa County, but that's absolutely not the case. We definitely want to collaborate and be in all the counties that we can be in. We know that being part of the chamber is a huge piece of that and a huge asset to us. And then even expanding into our events and things like that, we want all kinds of folks from the Valley to engage with us in our events and in our services, in all of it.
Is there a particular question I should have asked either of you but didn't?
I'm not sure if this was mentioned at the beginning, just so you're aware and that the community is aware that all of our services are free. So that's another reason why we depend on donations and continued community support.
Ladies, is there anything else that either of you would like to mention?
We've had a lot of ups and downs over the last year and a half or so. And we've just always felt very supported by all of the communities. And I think that all counties recognize that we are the only agency like this in the whole San Luis Valley. And they realize how important our services are. And so at times when things were not real great, we had a lot of support and we had people come forward and donate money and just, you know, ask how they can help. And we're off on a better track right now, but we always want that. We always want that support. We always want that community engagement. And we always want people to ask us what we need. So we really appreciate you asking us what we need and getting our information out there, because there will always be a need. We're a nonprofit, so there will always be a need. and we really appreciate our communities.
And again, all the contact information is listed on the podcast page here. Don't hesitate to stop by and see that. Jen, anything to add? Any final words?
I think I just want to say that, and we've talked about this a lot at our agency, like Shelley said, we've had a lot going on here at TUCASA. We are strong as a staff because we see how strong the people that we work with are. So we just really appreciate that. We're inspired every day and we just keep going.
And again, empowering all children and adults to live healthy, violence-free lives. That's the vision of TUCASA, Inc. Again, they're conveniently located in Alamosa, but serving the entire San Luis Valley region. Doesn't matter where you are. Remember, they've got a 24-hour hotline available if you need. Don't hesitate to reach out to them via phone, email, their website, or social media. And from crisis intervention and sheltering services to advocacy for victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence, it's TUCASA, Inc. They're there if and when you need them. Jennifer, Shelley, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Friends of Sky High is a citizen group consisting of representatives of user groups and interested people. This group is working to build a state-of-the-art multi-event and conference center for the entire San Luis Valley.
Have you heard? There's a buzz across the San Luis Valley regarding the Sky High Complex in Monte Vista. The journey to a new Sky High Park, multi-purpose building, and convention center is finally underway. Activities began in July with the demolition of the old buildings, and the new building frame is already under construction. The San Luis Valley Sky High Complex has been an important part of the entire region since the late 1800s. To find out more about this huge and all-important project for our area, and of course the Friends of Sky High, that's the group that's the driving force behind the new complex, we got together with Carla Shriver. Carla is a co-chair of the Friends of the Sky High. Also joining us is Kathy Woods. Kathy is another co-chair for the Friends of the Sky High. And Mark Thompson, he is the Alcon Project Manager. First off, I want to thank you all for joining us. I look forward to hearing what you've got to say because there's a lot going on here. Carla, let's start with you. Where are you originally from?
Adam, I'm originally from Eastern Colorado, around the Burlington area, where you blow over to Kansas one day and you blow back to Colorado the next. My family was in agriculture, commercial feedlots, and so I've always had an agricultural background.
All right. Well, how did you end up in the San Luis Valley then?
I got married. After graduating from college, I had a professional career in agricultural lending with a major bank. Later met my husband through his brother and ended up getting married and moving back to the Valley.
Well, obviously, you're involved with Friends of Sky High. Are there any other groups you're working with locally here in the San Luis Valley?
I'm heavily involved in the water community because of my agricultural background and my farm. So I stay really involved in that realm of the Valley as far as the water issues. I'm also involved with the San Luis Valley Federal Bank and just numerous other nonprofits.
Well, I understand the whole water thing. I mean, water is life, especially here in the Valley.
Yes, it is.
Well, Kathy,
hi,
it's great to
Adam.
See you here.
Good to see you.
Tell me a little bit about yourself. Where are you originally from?
I am a worldly person. I am from Monte Vista, right here at home. I moved to the thriving metropolis of Alamosa about 31 years ago. Yeah, I'm a Valley girl. Proud to be.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, your past, your history. What have you done?
I've had the opportunity to do a lot of really great things in my life, and it's really been fun. But I started out as a battle axe nurse, and I worked in Monte Vista and Alamosa doing that for a long time. I've been involved in other small businesses with my family, and I've had a lot of good experiences throughout my life. I am a Valley native and so proud of the Valley and so proud of this project. My dad was in construction, my family was, and he was part of the original building that we're talking about.
Really?
Yeah, so it's really bittersweet that, you know, it's outlived its life and we're ready to move on with this new project.
What are you doing currently?
Right now, I am the Economic Development Director for the City of Alamosa. And that kind of takes me back. I used to be a politician in Alamosa. I served in office for about 12 years, four of those as mayor. So it's really great to be back there in a different role now.
I'm sitting with a former mayor?
Oh, gosh, yes.
What are the groups you were involved with in the Valley?
Like Carla, I've been involved with a lot of different groups over the years. I was a former Adams State University trustee. Now I have graduated to be with the foundation of Adams State University and some connections with Trinidad State Junior College, just the same. lots of things like Upper Rio Grande Economic Development Committee. I'm the vice chair of that. Lots of affiliations, lots of past and present activities that I'm involved with.
Rounding out our group here, Mark Thompson. Mark, thank you for joining us, sir. Where are you originally from?
Hi, Adam, and thank you. I'm originally from a little town called Lusk up in Wyoming. Typically, nobody knows where Lusk is located, but it's about 130 miles north and a little bit east of Cheyenne.
And how did you end up in the San Luis Valley then?
As life happens, graduated college and then work brought me down here to the valley, moved to Monta Vista in 2004, and have been here ever since.
Tell me a little bit about yourself, your past, your history.
Probably a little bit of an interesting past. I originally started out in engineering. I was in the engineering field for about 15 years before I transitioned into construction.
Mm-hmm.
Worked in heavy earth moving construction for several years before moving on to project management and been doing that for about the past 5 years.
Any particular groups you're involved with here locally in the San Luis Valley?
My significant other and myself have 4 children between the 4 of us, and we stay busy chasing them with activities in 4-H, school sports, rodeo, etc.
I absolutely understand that. The Friends of Sky High is one of the Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce's Organizations of the Month for January. So congratulations, and let's talk about Friends of the Sky High. Please feel free, too, to get into as much detail as you'd like. What is the mission and vision of Friends of Sky High?
Well, that's exciting news that we are the Organization of the Month at the Monta Vista Chamber for January. That's exciting, and thank you for that, Monta Vista Chamber. The mission statement is Friends of Sky High are working to forward the vision of the Sky High Park Master Plan. This regional use complex is very important to the entire San Luis Valley region. It enriches the educational and cultural lives and provides recreation and social opportunities for Valley citizens.
There's a lot to that.
There's a lot to that.
What does that mean?
Well, there's been a long time vision for Sky High. We're just trying to move that forward and keep the culture going in a useful way that it can continue to be used in the future by everybody, not just those in the Monta Vista area in the western part of the valley, but the whole valley. It's a regional project.
It impacts all of us.
It absolutely does. And it really does enhance our cultural lives and provides all that recreation and social opportunity that we've come to love and would hate to be without.
When did this project first begin?
As Kathy mentioned, this project has been in the works for some time. And it originally started when the city of Monta Vista and various groups collaborated on a master plan for Sky High Park in 2006. And so that was the item that gelled everything together that gave us the long-term vision. And there's been various conversations since then. The community has been working on improvement of Sky High since 2008, when at that time, the Stampede Committee took the lead in driving the improvements to the bucking chutes, holding pens, and grandstands above the bucking chutes that seat 224 people, and the main grandstands that seat over 2,400 people. Those particular assets were in serious decay. They were made out of wood and they were rotting. So there were significant safety issues with those structures. I have a picture of a knife that's just stuck up in the wood. And if a big bull would have hit that just right, it would have knocked everything down and not only hurt animals, but would have hurt a lot of people too. The last year, Stampede held a concert in the old wooden grandstands, which was a WP project in the 1940s. There was actually a board broke on a walkway and a person fell through that hole. So it was time that something had to be done to those facilities.
It's a safety issue at that
point. Oh, it was a huge safety issue. So that's why we focused on the grandstands and the bucking chutes and those items back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
This project was a success and completed on time. And again, it was with the same idea that we're moving forward today with the collaboration of individuals, businesses, other stakeholders, and funders. We're putting this package together just like we did that one. Friends of Sky High was formed then in December of 2017 with the Monta Vista City Council approval with the purpose to move forward the vision of the 2007-2006 Master Plan. The all-volunteer community group consists of individuals and members of the Sky High Park Complex user groups who want to develop and build Sky High Park Regional Event and Conference Center. This regional use complex is very important to the entire San Luis Valley, as we've already discussed.
Mm-hmm.
It provides recreational, sports, and social opportunities and enriches the educational and cultural lives for all Valley citizens. And you might think there's a large time frame between when we worked on it in 2008 and now. And that's because there was some unusual circumstances that had stopped us from getting things moving. We would start moving the project forward, and then because of certain situations, we had to stop. So we never could get it pushed over the finish line.
We didn't actually stop, though. You just kind of put it on pause for a season.
Yeah, that would be a great way to phrase it, as on pause. It just took us a time to get our feet back under us and get a little traction and start moving forward again.
You are moving forward again. That old building is gone. It was an amazing video we saw just a while ago here, and we're going to put that on the podcast page, too, so you can see the old building coming down.
Yeah, that was a great day.
Friend's goal is to work with stakeholders to further the development of Phase 3 of the Sky High Park Master Plan. This facility is so vital to the success of not only Monte Vista, as I said before, and as Carla said, but to the San Luis Valley as a whole. It truly is regional.
Well, you see a lot of people are jumping in from all over the San Luis Valley. There's some wonderful organizations that I've just seen standing behind this, helping fund this, do whatever they can from everywhere, all across the valley.
And outside the valley, Adam. We have funders from Denver, New Mexico. We had an anonymous contribution from Las Vegas. We have funding coming in from all over the state and out of state. It's awesome what's going on.
We are so appreciative and really taken back. Carla and I talk about this a lot, by the support we've gotten from the community. It's just amazing. And it can be anything from dropping some change into a bucket at a store to some very generous donations. So we just can't thank the citizens enough.
It all adds up and it all helps.
Yes, definitely. Friends want to move forward. Phase 3, the vision of the building, is that multi-purpose event and conference center. This project is especially urgent now. We're coming on to some real critical times here. In early 2018, the city of Monte Vista closed the event center for potential safety issues. This would have negatively affected the number of scheduled 2018 events. With further analysis, though, it was determined that the building could safely be used for a short while, just 3 to 7 years at most, until something new could be built. There really isn't any other complex available in the San Luis Valley that can house the size and type events that are currently held at Sky High, like 58,000 to 62,000 attendees a year for all the events is a lot.
That is.
And there's just no other facility that we have. Furthermore, there's no conference area in the San Luis Valley large enough to hold large meetings. Adams State University campus is one, and it does accommodate some events, but its facilities aren't always available because the university, of course, takes first place when scheduling events, and that's how it should be. So part of Sky High is the attached old indoor swimming pool and has been closed since 2005. A lot of us remember taking swimming lessons there, and that was a long time ago for me. Friends of Sky High were very concerned that existing facility would be condemned in the near future if something wasn't done to correct the current safety issues. The old building was aging and its infrastructure and construction materials were outdated, and it was really expensive to maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a consensus that it would be more cost-effective to replace the existing building rather than try to renovate it. We went around many times as to which was better for that. Even if repairs were made to the old building, it would still be an old and poorly designed facility with outdated and aging infrastructure. And another factor contributing to the urgency of the large size of this project is the very tight estimated budget. If the project were delayed for even another year so that major events weren't impacted, the cost estimate could escalate to a minimum of 15% to 20% because of the volatile factors such as the price of steel, electrical, plumbing, hauling costs, all of that according to the contractor. So the time to act was now. We really had to do it.
And I might add that the city had the building studied numerous times by structural engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was their recommendation that the building either undergo major supporting through the support structures or it come down. It was time that something happened. And I know Mark had been in the building many times. And if you were in there and didn't look deep, you didn't see the stress cracks or any of that kind of thing. But if you got in the building and really took a hard look at it, you could see the degradation of the cement block and how it was really falling apart.
See, Mark, that's where that engineering background came in handy. You knew what to look for, didn't you?
The north wall was the original stalls from the 40s, from the racetrack days. And then they modified those and created buttresses off the north side. But the brick material was essentially unsuitable for the loading that was sitting on top of it. And it was a potentially hazardous building.
Well, Carla, when did you become involved with this project?
I became involved in 2008. At that time, I was a GOCO, or Great Outdoors Colorado, board member.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting in a meeting and became aware they were offering some very large grant opportunities at that time for capital improvements. And the light bulb went off, and I felt that the Sky High Park grandstands and rodeo bucking chutes and those kind of things were an ideal fit for those particular grant opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So I brought that back and presented it to the Stampede Committee. I was president of the Stampede Committee at that time as well. We got together and put together a plan and went forward to the city council and manager and made a proposal that we take the lead and move that project forward because something had to be done with the bucking chutes, the grandstands, and the holding pins, and then the main grandstands. They were in real degraded shape. It wasn't too long prior to that that the state had actually closed down the arena in Durango. And our facilities were worse than what was in Durango. So we were just trying to keep quiet so that nobody would come observe and hopefully not close us down. As we all know, Sky High Stampede is the oldest professional rodeo in the state of Colorado, which our area, the whole San Luis Valley, is very proud of.
Something to be proud of. It's an awesome event every year.
Yes.
Look forward to seeing it in 2021.
Yes, I think we all are. And then when I was county commissioner for Rio Grande County, I took the lead and drove the project for that large pavilion that sits west of the McMullen Building.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that was a GOCO project that we got funded. We had stakeholders, the local community, all six counties contributed to that project because of the San Luis Valley Fair.
Mm-hmm.
So we got funding, some matching funds from all six counties, some local individuals. Stampede Committee stepped up, and then we went and got a GOCO grant for that. So I've been in the development of that facility for some time.
Quite a while.
Yeah.
Kathy, how about you? When did you get involved with this project?
Oh, gosh, Adam, not nearly as long as Carla, I'll tell you that for sure. But what I have learned about my good friend Carla is when she comes to me and says, I have an idea, I want to get under the table because I know it's not going to be any small project. And this certainly is the largest thing she's hit me with. I was also on the Stampede Committee sometime around the end of the grandstand project. And oh my gosh, it was such a great project. And Carla did a wonderful job getting people together to donate time and such to make that happen. And I would say Carla and I started talking about this again in about 2017. We thought it's never going to happen. And we have been at this a long time. So let's just go for it. And once again, I kicked myself when she came and said, I have an idea, that I didn't close the door. But it is going to be very rewarding and it's going to be a great project. So I so appreciate her letting me be part of it too.
Mark, how about you? When did you get involved with all of this?
So Alcon got involved in, I believe, either late 2018 or 2019 to go to the construction phase. We entered into a design build contract. And so that was when we started with the design phase.
Just a little history on that that Mark might have not been totally involved in is friends and the city did put out an RFP for a design build project, and three companies did submit bids, and Alcon was the contractor that was awarded that bid. So there was a bidding process that we all went through because it is a government project, because it is owned by the city of Monte Vista. So, you know, everything has to go through certain procedures.
Sure.
So that's kind of how Alcon got in. They submitted a bid, and then they were awarded that bid.
Mark, anything to add to that?
Carla's spot on. It's a bidding process, and we were the apparent low bidder and awarded the contract, which allowed us to enter into the design phase and now obviously the construction phase of the project.
Mark, yes, he's professionally involved in Alcon, but Mark, on a personal note, has been involved with that facility through 4-H.
So my children have been involved with 4-H for the past, 14 years now. My daughter's a senior in high school, and my son's a freshman. So for many years, we've been involved with the 4-H facility and the shows and the horse events and the dog shows in that facility. So yeah, it's been a personal involvement to be over there and involved with the old building and watching a new facility come in. And for the kids also, it'll be a great facility all the way around, from 4-H to the community to all the other events Carla and Kathy have been talking about as well.
We are in phase three now. Phase one and two were the grandstands and everything else that you had mentioned earlier. Some people may not understand. It's like, wait a minute, this just started. How are you already in phase three? This is actually phase three because the other phases are already complete. So what's involved in this phase now?
Well, phase three is considered to be the demolition of the old multi-use building and swimming pool, which took place at the end of July 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're building a new multi-use event and conference center. The event center would be large enough to hold two full-size basketball courts. The conference center will encompass a large conference room that can seat over 400 people, and the four smaller conference rooms that can be configured into individual conference rooms or one large conference room. It will be able to seat a combined 300 people, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
There will also be a warming kitchen, and of course, there will be enough bathrooms so that the facility is up to code.
I drove by on the way over here. Holy smokes, that's a huge building. And it's steel, and it just looks very grand standing up there. We've touched on this just lightly. Let's get into a little more detail on this. How is this project going to affect Monte Vista and the San Luis Valley?
It really is a valley project. It's regional use, and it's going to be important to everybody in the valley. As a matter of fact, we're already getting some inquiry and excitement. The Alamosa Visitors Bureau is really excited to have the extra space. You know, they've offered to help us continue to bring more events to that complex once it's built. But it provides all kinds of recreation, sports, social opportunities, also the educational and cultural lives for Valley citizens. It's the only place that will hold larger gatherings, and these types of events take place all over the Valley. Not only will it help maintain the many large events that are currently held, such as the Sky High Stampede, which we've touched on, the Crane Festival, the 4-H Fair, the Southern Colorado Ag Conference, they're all huge economic engines for our local communities, but hopefully we'll be able to also bring those new events to the area. The Visitors Bureau, as I mentioned earlier, they do these studies on hotel stays, you know, in Alamosa. It is very apparent that when we have these events at the old Sky High Stampede Complex, they see the numbers go up in hotel stays, visitors to Alamosa. I know Del Norte and others see the same thing. It is truly a benefit to the whole valley.
Well, these towns are supporting towns. They're just minutes away from Monte Vista. 10, 15 minutes is nothing to drive.
No, and if you're going to a conference or something in the city, you know that you're going to drive at least that long in a much more busy area, right?
It's a nice open drive between Monte Vista and
Alamosa.
Yeah,
it gives you time to think,
mm-hmm,
doesn't
see it? The country, take in the mountains.
Isn't that the truth? Much different than the city.
Yes.
There are people calling now about the new facility and asking when it'll be ready and ready to use. So this hopefully really will bring new events, and it'll help our local economy. That's what I do for a living now. And I can tell you already, it's going to help all of the valley for that. I think the hospitality industries and gas stations are going to see an uptick too. So it's very beneficial.
Adam, I'd also like to bring up that facility also has a huge public safety component that we don't talk about much.
Please do.
The complex is a designated San Luis Valley emergency shelter and a San Luis Valley point of dispensing center. It has been used twice during wildfire situations to move and shelter people and animals. Back in the Million Fire and then the West Fork Fire. And then in 2018, the Spring Creek Fire on La Vida, it was on standby for an emergency shelter. So it has been used in that capacity as well. With many areas in the United States, catastrophic wildfires are becoming more of a norm in communities surrounded by natural forests, which, you know, sadly to say.
Mm-hmm.
So this new facility will provide shelter for locals and the many seasonal visitors that we bring in and invite to our area during these times. And so if we ever have a disaster, we'll have a place to shelter them at. Though we have not experienced the need for mass public dispensing, you know, our local governments prepare for that with the other public health agencies. I know the local governments and the agencies have had numerous drills for these types of events. Hopefully they won't happen, but we're prepared. And though we haven't had the need for that mass public dispensing, our local government and other agencies plan and prepare for that day should it happen, like COVID now. Here we are in a pandemic, and there is some talk about mass dispensing of drugs. Because of the situation we are in with the building, we are going to have to probably look for alternate sources of locations for this vaccinations. But that's what this facility could also do. And it was, of course, considered potentially as a field hospital for our region early on before it was demolished. But because of the poor condition of the building, it was not high on the priority list because it was just not adequate for safety needs. You know, back when Rio Grande County built the large pavilion, we purchased enough livestock panels for it to be designated as a large animal shelter in case of emergency needs as well. So if you had to evacuate horses or dogs, whatever, that place is set and ready for that type of emergency. The complex also serves as a commodity distribution center for low-income residents. It is administered by the local religious community. The Rio Grande County Social Services would consider utilizing the complex for its commodity supplemental program for the elderly if the facility was revitalized and in a better condition. So that facility truly does have a multi-use dynamic, whether it be, as Kathy mentioned, the educational, social, cultural, recreational type activities. It also has a public safety issue, as well as supporting our communities by providing, you know, services for commodity distribution. So it truly acts in many ways.
There's a whole nother use that a lot of people probably never even thought about.
You know, I think that was one of the big things on our mind when we were talking about this building. Carla and I were both on the Red Cross, the local Red Cross board back in the day, the Million Fire. They did evacuate so many RVs, families that were up at Fun Valley and camping, and some had animals, just like Carla said. It is such a great facility for that. Who else has livestock chutes really close and the kind of equipment that is available there and the space to do that? That was an inadequate facility to house people in, but we did. We put up cots and a lot of people helped. A lot of people came to help, but I can't even imagine the difference between the facility we know we've had to use for that in the past and the facility that we know we can use in the future. It's going to be a great advantage. I have a little history in public safety related things, and I can tell you just from having worked in the coroner's office in Alamosa a lot and, you know, as a victim services provider, There are things that happen that you just do need space. And again, just to know that we have good, adequate space with more restroom facilities than we've ever dreamed of being able to have use of. Lots of things are going to make this a big, useful project, and this is not among the end of the list either. I think this is an important aspect of this building.
Extremely important aspect. Wow, it is awesome to know.
And when we were designing this and planning it, all of these factors came into play as we were thinking through the process in its design.
Carla, what is it that motivates you to do what you do for the Friends of Sky High?
People for years have talked about how bad shape that facility was in. And Kathy and I are people of action, and we want to get things done. And so if there's a problem, we like to fix it. No one else was trying to work to improve the facility. All they were doing was complaining and not getting it done, and that even included the city, sad to say. So all we heard was this complaining. And it's a proven fact that when a project is led by local citizens, they tend to get done. And that's what we as a community want to move forward, and we want to better our community. Mm-hmm. And this facility has so many rich memories and economic possibilities for our area that it's something that's vital and is needed, and we just need to get it done.
Kathy, anything to add to that?
Well, as Carla said, you know, in a different way, sometimes you just have to step up and think about the greater good. And while it's time consuming, we try to have fun doing projects that we do together. And we love the camaraderie and the work of all the people that are involved in this project. I wouldn't know Mark. I wouldn't know you. I wouldn't know a lot of people if we weren't in the middle of this. It enriches our lives too in the long run. It's just an honor to be able to be part of it and to be part of a larger group that is all working very hard towards this. My kids, my two daughters, something they grew up with as a saying that I always left them with, whether it was as they were getting ready to play soccer or whatever the case was, whether you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. You've all heard that saying. And it is so true. You know, you've just got to believe in the project, be able to put in a little elbow grease and some time, and it can happen. Carla is a master at that. She doesn't sleep, I swear. She's probably already dreaming of the next thing by now.
Well, what are you dreaming of?
Don't ask. I don't want to hear it.
We don't want to know.
How has the whole COVID-19 situation affected the project, and what have you all had to do to adapt?
I'll tell you what, like everybody else in the whole wide world, practically, that, you know, it has affected everything about our lives, right? But we started out on this, you know, long before we dreamed of COVID, and we really thought we had done our homework. We had spoken with a lot of funders. We had in our mind about how much money we felt like we could make based on those previous conversations. We really thought we did our homework. Well, then COVID came, right? And it changed everything because many of the funders, their priorities changed and they were more into the other things that were urgent at the time. The planning and design phase of the project had already been completed by the time COVID came, and that took a couple years. We had just kicked off the fundraising campaign in full earnest when the COVID virus hit and things shut down. So it really made things quite interesting and changed kind of the way we had to operate.
It was a goal for us to ask a lot of foundations to help us with most of the funding for the project. And again, as Kathy mentioned, we got a lot of great momentum in January and February of 2020 in starting our local campaign to raise these funds so we could use that money as matching dollars for our grant applications.
And then COVID hit, right? So friends took a low profile in trying to raise funds because there were so many unknowns. And at the time, there were just basic human needs that needed to be taken care of for people to be able to just get through this. Because of the great humanitarian needs in not only the San Luis Valley, but other state and federal agencies as a whole, foundations were focused on humanitarian needs, and the Capital Campaign Project grant applications became a really much lower profile for them. But the community definitely stepped up, as we've talked about before. What a great asset we have in the San Luis Valley, and that's our citizens. It has been very financially supportive to the project, our own community. And this local support has impressed many foundations that we've submitted grants to. That's really helped us do much better on grants and be more listened to, just knowing the great community support. And while they're supportive of this project, several have not been able to totally fund our grant requests because they've supported many other humanitarian needs during the COVID crisis. So that was just an unanticipated outcome that we hadn't thought of. I mean, who would think that we'd be in the place we're in now? Even though capital projects are a pretty low priority over humanitarian needs, foundations have budgets too. So it just changed the way we had to do business.
Is there a common misconception or preconceived notion about the Friends of Sky High that you'd like to dispel?
You know, I don't know if there's a common misconception, but what we would like the community and public to know that we feel we have good controls in place for any funds donated to the project. Friends of Sky High, our fiscal sponsor is Monta Vista Community Fund. We are operating under their 501c3, which that is the type of an organization that foundations want to contribute their funds to, is a 501c3.
Mm-hmm.
However, this project, which has been a great selling point to obtain individual donations, is it qualifies as an enterprise zone tax credit. And those funds have to be distributed through the city of Monta Vista to get all the proper paperwork done. So what we have done in collaboration with the city of Monta Vista is that we've established separate capital bank accounts for each entity, specifically for the donations to the Sky High Park capital campaign, so that no funds are intermingled in any way. Monta Vista Community Fund operates a few other small projects. Those funds are in another bank. The Sky High Capital funds are in a separate bank. And that is the same with the city funds. The city's general operating funds are located in Bank One in Monta Vista, and then the Sky High funds that it receives is put in a separate account in another bank. So there is no commingling of funds in any way, and we have strict accounting of the dollars. We want the public to trust us that we are managing their funds in a proper way with all of this. The city is audited by a third party annually, and the Monte Vista Community Fund was audited last year and will be this year as well. We want the public to know that we have the controls in place to monitor all the contributions and that transactions are transparent in all means. And that is also in Alcon's way, that they go through a bidding process and their process is all very transparent.
Mm-hmm.
We want the public to trust us and maintain that trust in moving forward with this project, and that we see that we get it done completely on their behalf.
What can people across the San Luis Valley do to help this project along?
Adam, thank you for letting us talk to you today, because we want to reach out to all the citizens in the San Luis Valley and beyond and let you know that we need your help to make this vision a reality. We have been so blessed with the help we've already received, but this is an $8.6 million project. We've raised a little over $8 million. We're still seeking grant funding, definitely, but we still need to raise between $100,000 and $150,000 locally. So we're reaching out to everybody, asking that you be part of this important project for the Valley and be our partner in this big endeavor. And again, we're so blessed for all the partnership we've had, but we're reaching out even further today with you, Adam, to just ask for anybody who would consider it to help us out with this big effort. It's an Enterprise Zone tax credit qualified project, which Carla mentioned, and donors can receive a tax benefit from Colorado. It's 25% of cash contributions, which is really a good help to people with their taxes. Our website is Friends of Sky High, and Sky High is spelled S-K-I-H-I. www.friendsofskyhigh.org for more details and information about the Enterprise Zone credits and any information you want to find. Please visit with your accountant about individual tax situations, and note that the minimum contribution to receive an Enterprise Zone tax credit is $100.
Keep in mind, too, of course, that all of these links, all of your contact information, your social media, all this is going to be on the podcast page, too. So if you want to find out more, drop by the webpage and you'll have all that information there.
Yeah, please contact your friends and family that have ties to the area. Events that happen at Sky High, we all have those in our hearts and we have great memories. Let's keep this going. Please tell them about our fundraising project. We need to get the word out to as many people as possible, and we appreciate your help with that today, Adam.
Absolutely. So what are the plans and tentative timeline for phase four of the project?
Well, Adam, right now we're totally focusing fully on phase three. This is such a huge project that it's taken all we can. You know, we all at Friends are volunteers. We all have businesses and or jobs that we do in the real world. So we are totally volunteers, and so we need to focus on this and take one step at a time. We would say that Friends and the City of Monte Vista would probably need to evaluate that at a later date and involve the community at that time on phase four. We're just strictly focused on phase three because of the huge time it's taking, and it is a huge project. Because of the large investment in this project, you know, it's difficult to keep asking the community for financial support, especially in these difficult times. I don't foresee anything happening anytime soon as far as Friends is concerned until we wrap this up and let the dust settle.
Fair enough. Mark, can you give me a brief overview of the type of construction of the building? Again, I drove by. It's a lot of steel. Tell me more about it.
So what you see when you drive by there, Adam, is called a pre-engineered metal building, and it consists just of that, the metal components that you see when you drive by. So that'll be the skeleton of it. If you drive by and you notice there's two elevations to the roofs, the east side is a lower elevation than the high side. The high side will be the event center. It will be essentially a large open area. There will be outlets and electrical services in the floor that will allow for booths to be set up for trade shows, gun shows, whatnot, for typical events such as 4-H, for exhibits, for the Sky High, the dances and the concerts inside, much in a similar manner that the old building was used for. The large event center side will be substantially larger than the old facility. On the east side, that's the lower roof as you drive by on the east side. That's where the conference rooms will be. They'll have multiple configurations to accommodate different sizes of groups, anywhere from 400 people to a smaller setting of maybe 10 or 20 people.
Can you give me a proposed timeline for completion of the project? I realize it's a ballpark at this time, and I have heard some things through the grapevine, not trying to spread rumors or anything, but there have been difficulties with materials. because of COVID and just the situation of the world today, you've encountered challenges you probably didn't even expect when you went into this.
You're spot on, Adam. The whole COVID thing, I think, has raised issues that we still aren't aware of. But specifically with this project, there has been a few delays with the funding simply because, as Carla explained earlier, certain entities that were ready to give funding aren't able to do so because they've reallocated that funding for different measures. So in short, what that causes is a little bit of a gap between when construction started and when we will finish. We would originally anticipated having everything finished by June. However, with the delays in funding and whatnot, we're extending that out a little bit. We're still hoping to have the event center side finished possibly by June, but pushing the construction probably into August or so to finish the east side. It's still moving forward. It just slowed up a little bit, but hopefully we'll be done by August of 2021 with the entire facility.
No, as you said, there are just things that came up you could not anticipate.
Yeah, it's phenomenal, the impact of COVID-19.
So in closing, what do you want people to know about this project?
The project is a labor of love from so many people. And we have such a great working relationship with Alcon, and we're so glad that this project isn't just looking at the end result, which is going to be a beautiful, usable building that the Valley hasn't seen yet, but it's also a great economic driver. There are a lot of people that are helping to put up the building and other aspects of it. It's a good project, and people that wish to be part of it would be proud that they entered in and helped out and are part of this project. This is a community-driven project for a facility that has many memories. We hear that from people all the time about the memories of something they did in that park. It could have been the swimming pool. It could be a stampede event or 4-H. We all have memories of events we've attended there. The rodeo is a big one. It's Colorado's oldest professional rodeo at Sky High. The Crane Festival is a big one. San Luis Valley Fair, many educational events. It just goes on and on. However, the facility had seen better days and the public safety issues had to be addressed. Before it was condemned, we just wanted to go forward with this project and make it happen.
And what we need is the public's help and support to make this vision a reality with continued financial support. Again, as Kathy mentioned with details earlier, this is an enterprise zone tax credit project, so there are many benefits that way.
And we plan to acknowledge donors. We're really working on that now. We're going to come up with a big ad in the newspaper to acknowledge those who have donated already. And with the grandstand projects too, the 2008 to 2010, now the event center. So there will be a great donor plaque. We're coming up with ideas now. We certainly want to recognize everybody who participated in this huge event center and make sure that they get some thank yous, you know, on the wall. And we look forward to coming up with those ideas and moving forward with that.
This project is a community-led, a community-driven, and a community-supported project. It embodies our past, it serves our present, and it builds our future. And we're just so excited that it's coming in 2021.
We're all looking forward to it, I can tell you that. It has been, as you said, a long time coming. It's an amazing project. It's a whole lot happening. Anything else that any of you would like to mention?
Well, again, it can't be said enough or strongly enough, but we need you. We need you on our team. We want you on our team. It's really fun, actually. So be a donor. Be part of our team. Be a part of this great project for the San Luis Valley. I think you'll be happy that you did, and we will love you forever for it. So that's what I would say.
Mark, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's important for the people to understand when Carla and Kathy talk about the time they donate. It's literally hundreds, if not thousands, of hours that have gone into this across the board to make this facility happen. And so it's not with a light effort that we've gotten this far with it. If anything, please understand it is a true venture, and it's taken years and thousands of hours to get where we're at. So when you're thinking, should I or should I not, just think it's worth it. It's been a true drive, and we're seeing the end fruits, if you will, but it really needs one last push to get the financial side of the project where it needs to be.
Carla, final words?
I'd just like to thank all those that have contributed thus far for their contributions. And for those that have not, we understand if you have financial difficulties. We, again, understand if you can't make a donation, but please support us with letters in the paper as well. Please tell your friends and family about the project who might be able to make contributions. And the other thing I would like to acknowledge is the other hardworking volunteers for this project. We have a huge committee that has worked on this. There's also been a lot of businesses that have done in-kind donations thus far that hasn't even showed up in the budget. And we need to recognize those people, and that will go back to the donor wall that Kathy mentioned as well. This truly, truly is a community project.
It's an amazing project. There's a lot of excitement going on about it. At this point, Phase 3, so it's the Sky High Park Multipurpose Building and Convention Center. Construction is absolutely underway. If you haven't seen it, drive out Monta Vista. Once you get to Sherman Avenue, you can see the building. Again, contact information will be on this podcast page. So reach out to these folks, if nothing else. Let them know that you're standing behind this. Carla, Kathy, Mark, I want to thank you all for your time and for all the excitement that's going on. We're looking forward to seeing this happening later this year. Thank you all.
Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Weaver's Level Best Septic and Excavation is the premier company for all of your septic system, sewer, and excavation needs in the San Luis Valley and surrounding areas in Colorado. And San Luis Valley Precast is South Central Colorado's leading provider for precast concrete materials, including manholes, grease interceptors, and septic tanks in a variety of sizes. Stop by their location at 215 North Washington Street in Monta Vista, on the web at slvprecastco.com. That's slvprecastco.com. You can call Weaver's Level Best at 719-852-7336 or call San Luis Valley Precast at 719-852-6915. If you're looking for local banking services with ties to all of the communities in the vast San Luis Valley, then you should seriously consider San Luis Valley Federal Bank. They are a mutual bank with a mission to serve their employees, members, and community with respect, fairness, and trust. Visit any one of their three conveniently located offices in Alamosa at 401 Edison Avenue or 3415 Mariposa, and 330 Solar Avenue in Monta Vista. Stop by their website at slvfed.bank. That's slvfed.bank. You can reach all of their locations with one call to 719-589-6653. That's 719-589-6653. San Luis Valley Federal Bank. TUCASA is a local organization dedicated to supporting healthy, violence-free lives and relationships for all children and adults in the San Luis Valley. Among other things, they provide crisis intervention, shelter services, and advocacy to victims and survivors of domestic and sexual violence. Their 24-hour hotline number is 719-589-2465. That's 719-589-2465. On the web at slvtucasa.net. That's slvtucasa.net. You can also find them on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, or email info at slvtucasa.net. The journey to a new Sky High Park multipurpose building and convention center, located at 2335 Sherman Avenue, Monta Vista, is underway. The old building is gone, and the new building is now under construction. You can find out more about this important asset to the San Luis Valley on their website, friendsofskyhigh.org. That's friendsofskyhigh.org, or email friendsofskyhigh@gmail.com. Have you considered becoming a member of the Monta Vista Chamber of Commerce? You should! Start out the new year by finding out about all of the great benefits of being a Chamber of Commerce member and how to join. Stop by the Chamber office located at 947 First Avenue. You can also call them at 719-852-2731 or visit their website, montavistachamber.org. And be sure to check back next month for another Monta Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast on slvoices.com or any major podcast platform.
The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce is proud to sponsor the monthly Monte Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast, highlighting member businesses, events, and organizations. The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce exists to promote businesses and events in the Monte Vista area. They serve its members and the community at large by planning and hosting many local events, social media promotions, advertising, and help to improve community relations and communications among the residents and guests of the Monte Vista area. Their mission is to advance a sustainable business environment and improve the quality of life for the community. The Monte Vista Chamber of Commerce is located at 947 First Avenue in Monte Vista. You can call them at 719-852-2731. That's 719-852-2731. Or visit their website, montevistachamber.org. That's montevistachamber.org. And check back at the beginning of every month for another Monte Vista Chamber Business Spotlight podcast.
We appreciate you telling your friends to listen to the podcast on slvoices.com and check out our extensive calendar of events, more listings in one location than any other website around. You can help spread the word, too, by joining our Facebook group, SL Voices, Your Voice in the San Luis Valley, and liking our posts on other social media outlets. Also, check out our Instagram page for behind-the-scenes looks at what we do. And please, patronize our local sponsors. Remember to support the businesses here in the Valley. Most are owned and operated by your friends, family, and neighbors. We all love this area and want to see it flourish. And you can help by buying and supporting locally in your own and surrounding communities. Check back for another local podcast soon. Until then, this has been San Luis Valley Voices, a production of SL Voices, your voice in the San Luis Valley.